The Greengrass Sisters. Written by Lullaby Nell. Read by Opalsong. Part 6 of As Green as a Fresh Pickled Toad series. Summary. You weren't even my second choice for a spouse out of our year, Daphne says coldly, after at least 15 minutes of wintry silence. Was your first choice Blaise? Draco asks grimly, looking very like his mother as he downs a second glass of wine. Everybody's first choice is Blaise. Blaise's first choice is probably Blaise. Author's notes. This is so weird. I really love the Greengrass Sisters for no reason. So yeah, this is sort of canon compliant. It has Draco Astoria, at least. The rest is pretty much my personal headcanon of ridiculousness. Have I ever told you about my strangely detailed headcanon for the Greengrass Sisters? Mostly canon compliant, so watch out for Draco Astoria. Neither of them ever talk in any HP book, but babe, you got another thing coming if you think that's gonna stop me. So, the Greengrasses are one of the Sacred 28. They're old money aristocrats who play the long game. They're shrewd, ice-cold, blonde beauty kings and queens who stay neutral in every major conflict. Because that's what Greengrasses do, no matter the atrocities being committed in front of them. It's tradition. Greengrasses do not put themselves at risk. Their flawlessly clean hands hold their vastly successful businesses in a grip like a vice. And you'll never know if they hate you unless you cross them. If you cross them, they'll ruin you, and won't even look happy about it. They never look happy about anything, really. The Greengrasses practically own the magical agricultural business in Britain, and they're well known throughout Europe for both their farms and their import business. If you go shopping for potion ingredients, the high-quality ones, they probably either came from a Greengrass farm or greenhouse, or the Greengrasses imported it. They run and fund a lot of potions and herbology research, although not into anything like Wolfsbane potion, because it's difficult, expensive, and there's clearly no profit in a potion whose very small customer base won't be able to pay the bills. The Greengrasses liked Flement Potter very much, except for his whole muggle-loving, equal-creatures-rights nonsense. A genius, but a fool, really. Daphne Greengrass enters Hogwarts in the same year as Harry Potter and has no interest in involving herself in any bullshit. She goes into Slytherin, like most Greengrasses before her, and immediately knows she's not going near the Malfoy heir for anything. She fully expects to stay in her lane, graduate after 7 boring years putting up with posturing and immature squabbles, and probably end up marrying one of her father's business friends before squeezing out a couple kids and dying of sheer boredom. Daphne and Blaise are super chill. They're not exactly friends, but they will gossip and insult everyone around them. Neutral Slytherins for life! What happens instead is she meets Tracy Davis. Pansy Parkinson and Millicent Bulstrode are roommates that Daphne expects to mostly ignore for the next 7 years. But Tracy Davis is... interesting. The Half-Blood Witch is witty and funny and clever and sly and quite pretty. Her muggle-born father is co-owner of Wizarding Wireless Radio, and Tracy's dream is to either host a super popular talk show, go fight dragons and worms while exploring South America as a travel reporter, or become a theater director and bring muggle shows to the magical stage. Tracy is bearable, Daphne decides. Quite entertaining. She's even somewhat adorable when she gets excited about something, which is often, or spitting angry about something, which is also often. It's endearing, really, that Tracy gets so furious and down to fight over things. because Tracy is short and tiny, especially next to Daphne's tall, willowy figure. Tracy is very good at hexes, but she's also small, bright and energetic, like a compact sun. Daphne just wants to pick her up and put her in her pocket sometimes. No one knows what the hell a greengrass is doing hanging out with a half-blood bitch, but everyone in Slytherin quickly learns that trying to mess with said half-blood bitch will get you hexed by the half-blood bitch. And then, in the dead of night when nobody's watching, Daphne Greengrass will murder you in your fucking sleep. Well, she'll make you wish she did. Tracy Davis has a crush on Lee Jordan for the longest time, and Lee Jordan has no idea why this blonde Slytherin girl, Daphne, keeps glaring at him in the halls. He and the twins make a lot of people angry, but he has no idea what in the world he did to make this one so furious with him. In third year, Astoria Greengrass comes along and follows her sister into Slytherin. It quickly becomes obvious that Astoria is different to Daphne, because the pretty blonde is polite and friendly and emotional and generally not a terrifying ice queen. Astoria loves cute things and pink and flowers and herbology and gardening. She has a whole greenhouse of her own at home, and she wants to try growing this really rare plant from New Zealand. It's so super cool because you're trapped, Astoria's got you, and she's going to cutely talk about plants for half an hour and look like a kicked puppy if you try to escape from learning about all her 52 recent herbology experiments. Right behind Neville Longbottom, Professor Sprout's favorite student is Astoria Greengrass. Although, she'd like Astoria better if the girl didn't ambitiously try to crossbreed monstrous plants and use herbology class to experiment, because she's pretty much owl level in first year. Daphne is also really good at herbology and potions and such, but the difference is, while Astoria is pretty much willing to swim in dirt, Daphne prefers not to go near dirt or other messy things. She will, but she prefers not to. Daphne's participation in herbology usually depends on Tracy using puppy eyes and acting helpless. Daphne prefers arithmancy and ancient runes, having a terrifying acumen for numbers. Astoria is also a sneaky little brat with excellent business sense, a head for numbers nearly as dangerous as Daphne, and prefers being underestimated and thought a little bit ditzy, while Daphne prefers to be feared. They're both nerds, though. Daphne pretends not to be interested in anything, but she really loves numbers, and Astoria would probably marry a plant if she could. Don't cross the Greengrass sisters. The small one looks harmless, but her room is full of deadly plants, and that goop on her gloves is probably poison. The tall one lays enchantments and rune circles and curses, so if there's a piece of paper under your bed, you're so dead. Oh, and the tall one has this short half-blood friend with a mean hex library, so yeah. Fast forward through the Hogwarts years, and both Daphne and Astoria, and Tracy, have graduated. They survived. That's the important thing. Daphne is apprenticed to an old couple of professor types. One's an obscure arithmancer, and the other is an obscure ancient rune master. And they basically treat Daphne like a granddaughter as she edits their super dense books on increasingly obscure magical theory. Daphne doesn't show it, but she's really happy. Her parents don't understand what she's doing at all, and basically just assume that this is a hobby she'll grow out of. She might have, if not for Tracy encouraging her every step of the way. Tracy is career hopping a little bit. She's done a lot of interning, everywhere from the Daily Prophet to Wizarding Wireless Radio, to terror tours, to the Quibbler. She's meeting a lot of people and hoping to start a theater troupe so she can put on fantastic shows. Wizards don't seem to understand what the right person could do to Shakespeare with a little bit of magic. She has an apartment in the residential area of Diagon Alley, and Daphne is there more often than not, and pretty much lives there. Daphne pays half the bills, and her room in the Greengrass Mansion is collecting dust. She does actually live there. Astoria still lives at the Greengrass Mansion, taking over more and more of the family business from her parents. But she's doing it sneaky-like. At first, Astoria was just running her personal greenhouse. But they blinked, and now Astoria is secretly running most of the Greengrass Farms while everybody pretends that, oh yeah, it's definitely her parents behind this newest innovation and recent spike in business. And it was totally their idea to start this new charity, in part with the boy who lived, to make Wolfsbane available to werewolves in need. And the credit for the Remus Lupin Foundation totally goes to them. Astoria? Nah, she's just puttering around in the dirt over there and isn't at all manipulating her parents into keeping up with the modern age. All this happiness can't last forever, though, because the Greengrass parents get the idea into their heads that their girls ought to get married. Daphne's marriage will make an excellent alliance with another family, and whoever Astoria marries will be needed to run the Greengrass businesses. They'll need to be pure blood, of course, from a good family. Daphne and Astoria nod and tune this bullshit out. But eventually, shit, their parents actually try and do something about this issue. The Greengrass parents invite the Malfoys over for dinner. Daphne and Draco are shoved into a corner to spend time together, as though pushing two young people into the same space will make them get along or fall in love. Daphne glares frostily at Draco, and Draco fidgets awkwardly, trying to appeal to his mother for help. Narcissa thinks there are worse things for her son than trying to marry a Greengrass girl, and she's too busy drinking the Greengrass's wine and not listening to the parents' talk about how it might be beneficial for their families to be closer. Before eventually just giving up and being morose until this is over. Daphne and Draco both know what the Greengrass parents are trying to make happen here. You weren't even my second choice for a spouse out of our house year, Daphne says coldly, after at least 15 minutes of wintry silence. Was your first choice Blaise? Draco asks grimly, looking very like his mother as he downs a second glass of wine. Everybody's first choice is Blaise. Blaise's first choice is probably Blaise. Daphne just glares at him and turns up her nose. Draco assumes that he's right. He's not. Blaise was her second choice. And that Theo Knott was her second choice. Fuck no! Daphne seemed to not totally hate Theo in school. She despised Theo utterly, actually. The Greengrass-Malfoy interactions continue, and on some random visit slash meal slash party, Draco flees the room before Daphne's glaring gives him frostbite. He escapes to the Greengrass Gardens to get some fresh air, and is in the middle of calming down when somebody screams, "Stop that fucking radish!" A giant Roman running radish is peeling down the garden path at top speed and bowls Draco over. It bowls Draco over because the radish part is 4 feet tall. Giant Roman running radishes are fucking terrifying. Luckily, they have tiny legs, and bowling Draco over knocks it onto its side, where it rolls like a sad mixture of a pumpkin and a tortoise, and its tiny legs scurry uselessly in the air. Draco ditched herbology after fifth year, so he is confused and scared and really confused by this. His confusion continues as a young blonde woman, who looks a bit like Daphne, except not fucking terrifying, suddenly accosts him and thanks him profusely, before demanding that he help her roll this radish and its escaped partner back to the right greenhouse. Draco is swept up in whatever the hell is happening, and his fancy robes are ruined as he helps this bossy, bubbly blonde wrangling giant radishes. After the radishes are returned to their home, and their very sorry keepers, the blonde woman beams at him and tugs him off to go tackle some Caribbean sea squashes in their mating season, talking a mile a minute and saying that she's very glad that Laura has started to hire people who are actually competent. Who the fuck is Laura? Draco thinks dazedly. After an afternoon fighting plants later, Draco has realized several things. A, this is Astoria Greengrass, Daphne's younger sister who was in Slytherin with them. B, she thinks he works for the Greengrass estate for some reason and has no idea who she is. She demanded his name while beating back one of the squashes, misheard it, and started calling him Marco. He never got an opportunity to actually correct her. See, she's really... wow. Please just picture the hilarity that ensues when Draco starts to want to visit the Greengrasses more to meet Astoria again, is immediately called Marco and wrangled into building a rune-enchanted fence to contain exploding watermelons for her, and starts living an insane double life as Marco the Herbologist. His clothes and shoes are ruined. Daphne's glaring at him has become even colder and more suspicious, and he can't remember the last time he was doing anything half as interesting or that required half as much cunning. Running the Malfoy businesses and finances is boring as hell, and getting another job when the Malfoys are basically reviled by the non-elite of magical society is something he hasn't really been brave enough to try. Pansy is the only one he's told about any of this. Her response was, "What the fuck are you doing, Draco?" It did not help. Meanwhile, Astoria, who noticed who he was by the end of the second day, that's not bad, right? She did notice eventually, does not understand what Draco Malfoy is doing helping her create aqueducts for her Chinese fire rice and letting her call him Marco. But whatever, he's useful and good-looking and pretty funny, so when life gives you lemons, right? She hasn't told Daphne. She doesn't know what Daphne would do about this and doesn't want to find out. This continues to the point where the Greengrass parents suggest to Narcissa that they make something official out of this, and Draco is terrified that Daphne is going to murder him for sticking around this long, or that she'll find out that he's constantly trying to come up with ways to make her little sister laugh and murder him for that. Luckily, Daphne does not murder Draco. As soon as her parents start talking about engagement and setting a marriage date, Daphne turns right around, empties her trust vault, and elopes with Tracy Davis. They're going to travel the world for a while before Tracy starts her theater troupe, and Daphne finishes her double mastery and arithmancy in ancient runes. The Greengrass parents are scandalized. Narcissa helps herself to another glass of wine before cackling with laughter. And Draco is just, huh, he did not expect that to happen. He's trying to figure out what to do next when someone taps him on the shoulder. "Hey, Marco," Astoria Greengrass says. "Sorry about your runaway bride." After much embarrassment, Draco Malfoy asks Astoria Greengrass on a date. They end up doing something really normal, like going to a botanical garden or a zoo or something. And then Astoria drags Draco off to go to some herbology convention or backpacking like broke college students in the Netherlands to see the infamous Dutch tap dancing tulips. They are ridiculously happy together. The Greengrass parents are slightly mollified, and Daphne sends Draco a threatening postcard from Paris. It's not all great, though, because Draco's parents aren't really happy about the Greengrass girls' looseness when it comes to blood, and running such a large business leaves Astoria and Draco little time for each other. Astoria never really understands the strange tension between Draco and Harry Potter, and she doesn't like Harry because she thinks he made an unnecessary mess most of the time. The Greengrass parents are busybodies now that one daughter has eloped with a half-blood witch right under their noses, and it annoys both Draco and Astoria. One especially annoying thing that Draco has to deal with is Astoria being head over heels in love with Neville Longbottom. Astoria and Neville dissect flower arrangements at weddings and flock to each other at herbology conventions, and Astoria would probably try to hire Neville as her personal researcher if Neville wasn't apprenticing under Sprout to be the next Hogwarts herbology professor. Draco eventually just has to give up and make small talk with Hannah Abbott until Neville or Astoria stops to breathe. Draco and Hannah have had to bodily drag Neville and Astoria apart many times. Who the actual fuck can talk about turnips for 3 straight hours? Neville Longbottom and Astoria Greengrass, apparently. No one believes it at first, but Neville Longbottom is Scorpius Malfoy's godfather. It was Astoria's choice. Pansy Parkinson is Scorpius's godmother, since she and Draco remained good friends. Neville and Pansy get along mostly by ignoring each other's existence. Blaise Zambini is just sort of there, like some cool uncle. And lesbian aunts, Daphne and Tracy, often drop in to spoil Scorpius rotten. 9 out of 10 times, you will find Scorpius covered in mud from wrestling baby giant Roman running radishes, or scampering after his mother in the Greengrass greenhouses. Narcissa and Lucius Malfoy scream internally as Scorpius leaves muddy handprints and footprints on every surface whenever he visits, completely accidentally and seemingly magically, but they put up with it, like Astoria's parents do, if they want access to their grandson. Scorpius's favorite thing is dirt. His pureblood grandparents hate it, and Draco thinks this is hilarious. Daphne and Tracy coming home for the holidays makes it awkward sometimes, but everybody shuts up and plays nice for Scorpius. Everything is pretty good, and happy and peaceful, until Scorpius brings home both Albus Potter and Rose Weasley. Draco immediately blames Daphne Greengrass and Blaise Zambini for this. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback for both myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening!